Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. This is Dr. John Stamey, and this is the best hour and a half podcast on the supernatural and the paranormal on the radio, on the internet radio, that is. This is ScaryCast. It is great to have everybody here tonight. We're getting a full house as everyone is logging in, and it's great. First of all, I'm so glad to have our buddy from Niagara Falls, Canada, the one and the only Mark Johnston. How are you doing, Mark?
Hey, John, doing excellent. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. We're getting everybody in, and everybody. And, yeah, you know how these technical problems are, but it's great. We're glad to have you here. So what have you been up to paranormal-wise in the last week or so? Anything interesting?
I'm just following different pages. There was, I follow pages that have to do with, like, keeping up with UFO news. So there's some talk about some military seeing new UFOs, Navy. Yeah, you know how there was a few years ago, there was those TikTok UFOs down in California. I believe it was in the Navy. So they're just expanding upon that, and it's pretty interesting when, as far as evidence goes, when there's some type of evidence that's like eyewitness with credible sources, you would think that has something of good to value to add to the whole UFO debate. So we'll see how that develops.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. UFOs are a wonderful topic, and now. From our man from West Hollywood, Devin Tate. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, John. So happy to be here. Good to have all of you here with us.
Oh, yeah. We've got a stellar crowd tonight, and we're glad to have you here. And thanks for your help a little bit after the show. I appreciate it. We'll see what happens. But appreciate it. And you're our longest-running ScaryCast host. You're the person that has lasted the longest because you can stand me the most. So thank you very much. And anyway, our guest of honor tonight is the one and the only from Roswell, New Mexico, John LeMay. How are you doing tonight, John?
Hey, I'm doing good. So y'all can hear me?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. Usually, you know, we talk in the green room before the show, and this time I just, it's like I was just on all of a sudden, so I was just making sure. Okay, well, good.
Oh, yeah, we're having standard ScaryCast issues. There's a ghost around here and whatever. We're glad to have you. Robin is in the green room waiting to come on, and so is Dr. Trey Donaway. Robin, how are you doing, the queen of ScaryCast? Is Robin there? I guess Robin is not there. Maybe she is. Anyway, she'll probably call back in. That's okay. But anyway, John, we're glad to have you. It's wonderful. And now what are we?
Oh, I lost you. I think you asked me what we're going to talk about. Can you hear me still?
Yeah, what are we going to be talking about tonight?
Okay, I think we're going to talk about mummies and the Wild West, as odd as that sounds, because there was actually quite a few of them, or maybe I should say mummies from the Wild West. So that'll be our topic tonight, because last time, you know, when I came on the show, we were going to talk about my new book, Cowboys and Monsters, Vampires, Mummies, and Werewolves of the Wild West, and we got so caught up talking about those vampires, we never even got onto the mummies and the werewolves, and so I figured tonight we'd just talk about mummies, and then maybe next time we can finally move on to the werewolves, so see how it goes.
Great.
Yeah, so
now,
I guess...
So joined Dr. Trey Donaway, the Surgeon General of ScaryCast. How are you doing tonight, Dr. Trey?
I'm doing great, John. Now, mummies of the Wild West, is this like Peruvian or Southwestern mummies, or are these more like cowboy mummies?
You know, Trey, they're mostly cowboy mummies tonight. There definitely are. You're right. There are mummies from South America that are really interesting. I didn't put them in this newest book, I decided to stick just to North America, United States, but I think in the future I'm going to do a book just on mummies of the Americas, North and South both, and Canada, because there's just so many and they're so darn interesting.
Yeah. Well, that sounds great.
All I got to say is Boris Karloff as the mummy was the most interesting thing in the world for about 5 years. That was he was apparently other than Bela Lugosi and Dracula, he was the thing that really captured everyone's imagination. Did I just hear Gary Chance from Robin Gray?
Yeah, I'm here. I was here before, but you couldn't hear me.
Well, we can hear you now, and honey, we're glad to have you here. We got the whole cast here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
And we've got one of our most exciting guests. Start talking about the mummies, buddy.
Yeah, sorry. Y'all kind of cut in and out a little bit, but it's good to have Trey back and Robin back, because I think the last two times, both of y'all were busy and Trey was moving, so it's nice to have y'all back. But yeah, Mummies of the Wild West. So I think the one we'll start with, just because we could probably talk all night about this one. Believe it or not, John Wilkes Booth, who shot Lincoln in 1864-65, if some reports are true, he got turned into a mummy after he died. Now,
oh, wow.
For that to work, though, yeah, for that to work, it's one of those deals kind of like with Billy the Kid and Jesse James and Butch Cassidy, because all those outlaws, after they supposedly died, they had men pop up claiming that they were Jesse James or Billy the Kid, and that history was wrong and they had faked their deaths. And in John Wilkes Booth's case, so, you know, history tells us he was apprehended not too long after he killed Lincoln. But other sources say that the man that was killed in a barn that night, it wasn't really John Wilkes Booth, and they just wanted to be able to tell the nation that the manhunt was over, so they passed off this random guy as John Wilkes Booth when it wasn't. And then there's another story that says it was all a conspiracy orchestrated by the Vice President of the United States so that he could take over from Lincoln when he died, and that he was in on the assassination and helped Booth get away. But in the 1870s, a man named John St. Helen surfaced in Granbury, Texas, and he was a bartender there. And he got really sick, and he got so sick that he thought he was going to die. So he called for his lawyer, which was a man named Finnis L. Bates. And this isn't really terribly important to our story, but it's too interesting not to mention. Finnis Bates is the grandfather of the Academy Award-winning actress Kathy Bates from Misery and all those other movies. So that's just kind of interesting. And John St. Helens, he calls for his lawyer, which again is Kathy Bates' grandfather, Finnis Bates. I'm sure Kathy Bates wasn't born yet. I mean, it's the 1870s. She's not that old. But so Finnis Bates takes St. Helens' deathbed confession, and he claims that he's the man who shot Abraham Lincoln, and he's John Wilkes Booth. And the only thing is, St. Helens, he actually pulled through. He didn't die. So after that, he was like, whoops, well, I better get out of town now that everybody knows I'm really John Wilkes Booth. So he fled Granbury after he recovered. And let's see, about 30 years later in the early 1900s, I think it was 1901, in Enid, Oklahoma, he was then under the name of David E. George, and he decided to commit suicide. And before he committed suicide, he confessed to a local minister's wife that he was John Wilkes Booth, and then he ingested a bunch of arsenic, and it did finally kill him. And what was interesting, though, is all this arsenic in his system, when the undertaker embalmed him and his embalming fluids combined with the arsenic already in his system, he turned into a mummy. And, I mean, for anybody that's listening, you know, mummies, we think of the Egyptians and how they get all bandaged up. It doesn't mean they have to be in bandages. It's just mummified means that they're in a, you know, an incredibly well state of preservation. So all those chemicals just really preserved and hardened his body. And the Undertaker, you know, nobody wanted to claim that body until Finnis Bates, you know, he read the obituary of David George, and he saw the thing about how he claimed that he was really John Wilkes Booth. So he thought, oh, that's probably John St. Helens' new alias was David E. George. And so Finnis Bates went to Enid, Oklahoma to get the body. And a judge actually let Bates have the body because the judge thought, well, that's his lawyer. He's going to see to it that he gets buried. Only that's not what Bates did. He began to exploit the body as like a traveling show, and then he sold it to one of the more famous circus owners of the time. I can't remember their names, but they bought the mummy, and they toured this mummy around the country as the mummy of John Wilkes Booth, who shot Lincoln, and it was quite a sensation. And it toured, let's see, up until the 1950s. So it really got around. And what makes it even more interesting is kind of like King Tut's mummy, people said it was cursed. Like, for instance, in 1920, it was on... Now, this sounds like a scene from an Indiana Jones movie to me. On 1920, they were transporting this mummy by train, and it was a circus train with all these quote-unquote freak circus animals on it. And the train with these freak circus animals crashed, and it killed a bunch of the animals. And people said, well, it's because that mummy's cursed. And then one of the current owner of the mummy at the time, I think he died not long after that, which they also attributed to the curse. And then it gets even funnier and weirder because after the train wreck, somebody managed to get the body. Like, they stole it. And they weren't really... They weren't stealing it to take it for themselves. They wanted to see to it that the man who shot Lincoln got lynched properly. Even though he was already dead, they wanted to take this mummy and lynch him. And somehow or another, the circus owner did manage to recover the body and get it back. I think eventually they just ransomed off the mummy somehow, and he paid part of the ransom and got it back and started touring the country again. And it basically kind of disappeared in the 1950s. Nobody knows where it went. And then in the 1970s, there was this resurgence of interest in the idea that Lincoln's assassination was a government conspiracy and that John Wilkes Booth did not die and he got away. So when that happened, somebody was like, well, where did that mummy go? And the authorities kind of started looking for it, and it just basically vanished without a trace. And we still don't know where the cursed mummy of John Wilkes Booth is today. It's totally gone, but it's a very wild story.
That's an incredible story, John. And I'm going to ask Robin, and Robin, please forgive me. Do you have any vibes about what in the world happened to that mummy?
I really don't. I'm intrigued, and I'm kind of listening to, if I get any during the show, that I will let you know. So I'm just kind of listening to it. I'm kind of having some technical problems on this one where I hear you guys and then I lose you guys. So I'm missing bits and pieces.
Well, it's interesting. You talk about John Wilkes Booth, and I have told several times my story of Project Pegasus and Andrew Basiago, and we will save that for another time. John, you and I need to discuss this. This could we could have a killer little book here about what happened, about who shot Lincoln, and now this thing. So it's really kind of great. All right, well, that's a wonderful story. Does anybody, first of all, does anyone have a question? Does Mark or Devin or Trey or Robin have a question? Or a comment? This is just super cool. This is brand new to me, and I love it.
So did they hang the mummy? Or did they find the mummy, and they couldn't do that?
I think they changed their mind. There was talk they were going to hang it, and then they decided, well, we'll just ransom them off for I think it was $1,000. And so what the mummy's owner did, he said, well, I'll give you half of the money up front and then half upon the delivery of the mummy. But what he did was when he wrote the second check, he made it a hot check so that when the ransomer cashed it, he wouldn't get anything. So he basically paid half price for the mummy. And that's what I kind of remember.
Well, it's probably wear and tear, you know. I mean,
yeah.
He wouldn't be if he'd been, like, carted around and thrown into a suitcase and dragged back out. A little wear and tear. You get a discount off of used mummy. I mean, used mummies are always more expensive than a new mummy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
showroom fresh, you get full price. But used, it's like, nah, the tires are a little bit low. The thread's bare. You're missing some, yeah, it's the mileage, you know. So
that actually, gosh, Trey, that can lead us into the next mummy story, actually, because that talking about buying mummies. So there's a place called Manitou Caverns in Colorado, or I think it's also called Cave of the Winds. And, you know, when did they find that? Oh, okay, well, Devin, yeah, tell us. I see, now I've never actually been there, Devin. I'm really what you call an armchair researcher. So you tell me what you thought of Manitou Caverns, because I'd love to hear about it.
You know, I don't remember too much off the top of my head. I'll have to look it up. But I know when I was a kid, I grew up in Kansas, so we went to Colorado all the time for vacation. And I definitely remember going to Cave of the Winds.
So the reason, though, why Trey's jokes about buying a mummy came to mind, well, so Manitou Caverns, you know, this old promoter, what is his name? I've got it right here. John, what was his name? George Snyder. So he was an old showman named George Snyder, discovered this cave 1880s or so. You know, it's just a cool old cave. And coincidentally, though, George's brother dug up some Native American mummies in a quarry a few miles away. And so he bought the mummies for, what was it? The mummy, yeah, he bought one of the mummies for $5, a real bargain, $5 for a real genuine human mummy. And he started hiding this thing in the Manitou Caverns, and he'd take people on tours, and he would have the mummy pop out at him and scare him. And he'd act like he'd never seen it before. So, you know, classic showman trope. But word started to get around, you know, among the tourists that, you know, you're going to see this mummy, and it's going to be around this certain corner. And so when people started to, you know where they were going to see the mummy, George was like, well, you know, I need to hide this thing then, and I need to move it somewhere else. So he goes to hide the mummy, only it's missing. And the thing is, the cave has a sealed front door that George is the only one with the key to it. So the mummy had to disappear into the cave itself. And George never knew where it went or who walked off with it, but because again, nobody should have walked off with it because he had the only key to the only entrance. So it's a mystery, and the Native Americans said that was really the opening into their underworld. So some people think the mummy just got sucked into a portal or something.
Well, I have a question, and I don't mean this way this is going to sound. I'm being serious when I ask it, but it's comical, but it's not comical. I really want to know. How would one even go about looking on where to purchase a mummy? Like, I can't even wrap my head around that.
Mummies
like,
are
no, Robin, yeah. It's just a different time, the Wild West.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to be funny or poke fun at it at all. I'm being very serious. Like, I can't even imagine. I mean, I can imagine somebody buying it because of the, you know, like the roadside shows and that kind of thing. That doesn't surprise me, but I just can't even imagine how they would even know where to go to purchase it.
So I bet, Robin, you said we keep cutting out. I bet it cut out when I was talking about that. So it was the guy who...
It had to because I couldn't hear it.
Okay, yeah, the guy who owned the cave, his brother owned a rock quarry, and he accidentally, just by chance, dug up three Native American mummies. And the brother bought them for a whopping total of $5. And so it was just kind of a chance discovery.
Now, yeah, now I heard the part about the money part, but the whole first part of it was gone.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, so it was totally by chance just that his brother dug up some mummies by accident at his quarry.
They did that. It happened, I think, like that with the Minnesota Iceman, too, if I recall, eons and eons ago. They had seen it at him at a roadside show, and somebody made an offer on it. It was just like an accidental thing.
Yeah. Now, see, I want to do a whole book now on just roadshow monsters like the Minnesota Iceman and we had one in New Mexico called the Cardiff Giant. Or no, the Cardiff Giant was from New York. And then in New Mexico, we had the Petrified Man of Carlsbad Caverns. That could be a cool book, though, for sure.
Yeah, now there is one that you would want to stay away from. And they took it, and this was within the last 10 years. Don't quote me on the dates. They were taking what they called Hank. And he was supposedly a real Bigfoot, and they were taking him to all these roadside shows and things like that. Just for the record, he was actually fake. It was not real. It was the whole thing was a hoax. Mm-hmm. So when you go to do it, you don't want to use him.
Okay.
I just got off eBay, and there are no mummy parts available on eBay. So I would think it would be really hard to find a mummy if your intent is to buy a mummy.
I mean, Amazon would think.
But I bet you, if you go to Egypt and you went to the pyramids and the people that sell stuff around the pyramids, I bet you that they would find something they could sell you that they could call a mummy.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, Trey, because that's what they actually used to do. They used to sell mummies on street vendors
yes.
in Egypt. You could buy.
Yes.
It was a popular thing where
Westerners would buy them. You could grind them up as a medication of sorts.
Yeah,
too.
It used to be a medicine. They used to eat and to have these mummy reveal parties. Like, you know how they have baby reveal parties now? It was like a mummy's reveal
My
party.
My daughter used to be fascinated with anything in Egypt, the mummies and Cleopatra and all of those things. And she could literally recite anything you wanted to know about them in Egypt. She would just, anything she could read on it or find out on the internet or whatever, she would just devour it.
Well, I tell you, anytime we turned around in Egypt, there was somebody that was going to sell you something rare and valuable. And I bet if you said, no thanks, I'm looking for a part of a mummy, they'd say they have a friend. They have a friend who has a part of the mummy. You just stay right here, and I'll be back in a few minutes, and I'll bring you part of a mummy. I know that would happen. Of course, now whether it was a real mummy is debatable, but maybe
yeah.
it would be like freeze-dried ham or something. But it would they'd find a mummy for you to purchase. If you had money, they can sell you mummy parts.
Oh, wow.
You know, John LeMay, this is the single most entertaining scary cast of all time. We have never talked about buying mummy parts ever. So you get the
Amazon sells everything.
Yeah,
and you can't
I'll look on Amazon for mummy parts. Mummy.
You know, actually, while we were talking, I Googled, you know, where to purchase. I mean, I know it sounds funny, but I was being very serious when I asked the question because, again, I only could hear bits and pieces, and I did hear him talk about, you know, he ended up only paying half price for it, but the rest of it, I couldn't hear. And that's why I had asked the questions. But I have to wonder, you know, back in the day when those kinds of things were out there, you know, you would go to a sideshow thinking you're going to get entertainment and people would be so enthralled with it, I would imagine they would ask if they could purchase it. Or you would have other people that had these roadside circuses or sideshows or whatever. And then they in turn, you know, would want it for their show.
Yeah, I think if you're going to have a traveling roadside show and you didn't have a mummy, you know, nobody's going to show up.
I know,
you could have all sorts of things. And then they say, well, do you have a mummy? And you go, no, we we don't have the mummy anymore. And they go, well, I'm going to go find one that has the mummy.
My favorite mummy movie was Abbott and Costello Meets the Mummy.
Oh, yeah. Well, this is Dr. John. I was going to offer something. I am actually friends on Facebook with Bill Mumy, M-U-M-Y, who played Will Smith on Lost in Space.
Yes.
And I might just see if we can get John LeMay back and see if we can get Bill Mumy here and talk about Lost in Space and his incredible Eastern European name and all that. I think that would be one heck of a scary cast, I'll tell you that. So let me see what I can do, you know. Somebody's got to do it. We may as well do it. But, John, these are great stories. I hate to ask you this. What's our next story? This is incredible.
I have to say, I think I ran into Bill Mumy when he was coming out of the Roswell Art Museum one day at the UFO Festival. I could swear Bill Mumy was one of the guests, and I was walking in, and he was walking out. And, you know, I know what Lost in Space is, but I'm too young to have watched it. But I know the person with me was like, wow, that was Bill Mumy. At least I was pretty sure that was him. It was like some childhood TV star. So I think I've kind of passed by him, and I could swear that behind Bill Mumy, is it Bill Mumy or Bill Mumy? How do you say it?
Mumy. It's Mumy. Mumy. Bill Mumy.
Yeah, okay, I could swear behind Bill Mumy I'm not kidding you, was the crazy hair guy from Ancient Aliens. Because you've got to understand, when the Roswell UFO Festival is happening, you got all sorts of crazy guests just running around, and I'm pretty sure those two were together coming out of the art museum as I was going in to do my thing, and so it's just funny. So, I mean, I guess I might have met him before. It's just tough to remember.
It's a crazy
and then
world, isn't it?
Y'all were talking about, you know, the Universal mummy movies, and you're talking about carnival shows. You know, I also do books on unmade movies, and you know, I have one called Classic Monsters Unmade, which is all about Universal's unproduced monster movies. And I just have to say, Universal's one unproduced mummy movie was called The Mummy's Return, and in that one, you know, in the previous movie, Karras, he had walked into a swamp and, you know, disappeared into the depths. Well, this movie was going to have him find Karras in the swamp. And, kind of like the real story I talked about of the Mummy of Manitou Caverns. They find Karras. They don't realize that he's the mummy. They just think he's a mummy, and they dig him up out of the swamp, and they throw him in the back of a truck, and some farmer comes along to sell produce to the workers, and he buys Karras the mummy to be his new scarecrow. This is really what they wrote for their unmade mummy movie. I think it's really funny and really cool. So the farmer buys Karras to turn him into a scarecrow, and he strings him up in his in his cornfield. So you see Karras the classic mummy with like crows perched on his shoulders. And then some carnival promoters drive by and they see Karras and they can tell he's like a bona fide mummy. So they just steal him and they take him to their carnival show. And you can imagine, you know, Karras wakes up in the middle of one of the big presentations and goes on a killing spree at the carnival. It was pretty cool. You know, it was much better than the mummy movie they ended up making, which I think was The Mummy's Curse, but this one was going to end with Karras getting sucked up into a tornado. That's how the movie was going to end. So it was a pretty wild, unmade mummy movie. I just had to throw that in there.
So do you have the actual script for it? Is that how you knew the plot?
No, there's a book called The Mummy Unwrapped, and the author went through all the mummy movies, and he, I think, had the treatment for that one. And so, yeah, I believe the book's called The Mummy Unwrapped.
Okay. I'm sorry. One has to laugh a little bit. That just sounds spectacular.
Yeah. You know, if a mummy is, they desiccate mummies. They would pack them in natron, a salt, which would suck moisture out of the mummy. So if you put a mummy out in a cornfield and it rained, it would like, would it reconstitute to be, it'd be like an instant mummy. You just add water and then bingo, you're back to the original mummy, a little older, you know, and if in the drying process, you know, you lost some body parts, that's understandable too, because, you know, after a couple of years, you are technically a used mummy. So, I wonder if they would, you know, you ought to avoid moisture. You wouldn't want to put them in the south with high humidity. I keep them kind of dry. Otherwise, you could reconstitute in the, with water, and then you'd have mummy trouble, I would think. Just some random thoughts for you.
Well, Trey, that reminds me. When I was little, I grew up in this little town, and a couple towns over, there was a kind of a tourist attraction called the Garden of Eden, but it was really just this guy's house in his yard where he had made all these sculptures and elaborate political statements through his sculpture, and he built his own little mausoleum. And when he passed away, his wish was to be, I guess, mummified or preserved within this glass container that he had built. And so they fulfilled his wish, and they buried him there for visitors to see. But eventually moisture started leaking in, and air started leaking in. So he started to decompose very slowly. And I'm pretty sure he's no longer on. I'm pretty sure he's not on display anymore. But when I was a kid, that was the first time I'd actually seen a dead body in real life.
Well, yeah, and there's nothing worse than a moldy mummy. You know, moldy mummies, they just don't cut it with anybody. Nobody wants a moldy mummy. There's a song about moldy mummies.
You are so silly.
Yeah, mummies wouldn't be a big hit in the South. They'd get moldy fast.
Oh, my God. Well, amazing, John. Do you have another story for us? We're loving the stories about the mummies. I mean, this is unlike any
mummy
scary stories we've ever had. Do what?
Well, it's another funny one because Trey talks about accidentally getting a used mummy. And, well, so this story, this mummy is going to go all the way into the $6 Million Man, the old TV show from the 70s. So.
Right.
You know this one.
No, I just know the $6 Million Man.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, you're not going to believe it. So, yeah, okay. So before we get to the $6 Million Man, we got to go back to when the mummy was still alive. He was an outlaw named Elmer McCurdy. And he was, when I say outlaw, he was, you know, long past the days of Billy the Kid. He was actually born about the time that Billy the Kid died in 1881. And he didn't decide to become an outlaw until he was about 30 years old in 1911. And he wasn't really a very successful outlaw. He was kind of inept because he had a bad habit of using too much dynamite and nitroglycerin on his jobs. Like, there was one time, it's kind of like one of the scenes in like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid where they use too much dynamite and just blow the safe out of the train.
Mm-hmm.
He did
mm-hmm.
that once. He used too much nitroglycerin on the bank vault or in the safe that was in the train, and it was full of, like, silver coins. And it blew up, and like the silver melded into the frame of the safe or something. But anyways, there was thousands of dollars he could have gotten away with, and they only got away with like $100 and change or something after this really botched train robbery. And then one time they did another train robbery, and they held up the wrong car. They were supposed to get the car with the bank vault, but they got the car with the passengers. And they had to hold up the passengers instead, and I think they only made like $40. And It was just, he was a real inept criminal. And he got caught that same year in 1911. He got shot and killed. And the embalmer, I don't remember what the embalmer did, but I think he used too many chemicals on him or something. And he kind of like John Wilkes Booth, his body mummified. And this would have been, you know, 1911. The Wilkes Booth mummy would already have been touring by then. So I think this embalmer saw this outlaw that he had accidentally mummified, and he was like, well, I could, you know, make a little attraction out of him. And so he started propping him up on the porch of his funeral home just as a little attraction, I guess, to draw people in, and he'd charge people a buck to look at it. Eventually some men came along claiming to be Elmer McCurdy's brothers. And, you know, they wanted the body to give it a proper burial, and they pretended like they were just disgusted with what he was doing by exploiting it. Well, it turns out his brothers, they weren't really his brothers. It was a couple of circus showmen who just wanted the mummy for themselves, you know, so they just deceived the undertaker into getting the mummy. And they did, you know, kind of the John Wilkes Booth thing and started touring this mummy around the country. And they kind of made fun of him as they called him the outlaw who wouldn't give up, you know, kind of a nod to all of his botched robberies. And, you know, he toured around the country, and eventually he wound up at a California amusement park. And it was probably in the 1950s or 60s. And they decided, instead of really using him as a mummy, the amusement park decided, well, we'll just use him as a prop. We're going to string him up by the neck like he's a hanged outlaw. And so all these people in the park, yeah, they just think he's a dummy. They don't realize this is an actual dead man, you know, hanging from the noose. And, you know, a few years later, the $6 million man leased the property to do an episode. And they didn't want this dummy in the shot. And so they were going to move it. And, you know, again, they just think it's a plastic dummy. And they yanked on the arm, and it tore right off. And they look at it, and they see this is an arm with, like, dried-out muscle and bone in it. And they realize that was a real body. And, and by this time, too, the owners of the park had switched hands. So they didn't know they had a real dead body. They didn't know who it was. So it kind of started a little furore over who is this dead body. And there was kind of like a cold case investigation into it. And finally they figured out that it was the mummy of Elmer McCurdy. And what's so funny about it is, you know, McCurdy was a nobody who wanted to be a somebody. Well, Oklahoma decided, because he was from Oklahoma decided they wanted him back, and they gave him a proper burial, and like 300 people came to his funeral, which is kind of funny. So, and which would have been in like 1976 or 77. And so it's a pretty crazy story with lots of twists and turns you wouldn't expect.
Yeah. I don't understand people. I mean, I guess it shows you that even back then there were rotten people out there.
Yeah.
Taking advantage of people. I mean, really. But it's fascinating. It really and truly, John, I appreciate you bringing this to the show today, because it really is fascinating. These are things that, you know, you wouldn't think of. You make us think. That is the best thing, is you make us think.
Oh, thank you. Well, I like coming on here because we all go down the rabbit hole together. We only think we're going to talk about this or that subject, and then
there.
We just go down something totally different.
I know. I was listening when John was doing the introductions, and he was asking everybody, you know, how's it going, what's going on, you know, our thing. And, of course, I couldn't talk because nobody could hear me. And I'm thinking, well, what will I say this week when John gets to me? Oh, I can say, yeah, Bigfoot running amok around the yard, in the front yard, in the backyard, UFOs flying out of the house. Normal here. Nothing's changed.
I'm sorry, Robin. You're so entertaining. Everybody's so entertaining tonight. This is great about mummies. Now, John, do you know much about the Boris Karloff mummy? And I didn't know I was going to ask you about this, but you had such great stories. Can you tell us much about the Boris Karloff mummy, or is that kind of outside your realm of expertise?
No, in fact, I can tie the Boris Karloff mummy into our friend we talked about last month, you know, Saint Germain the Vampire. So, Saint Germain, you know, how he's an immortal mystic. Well, The Mummy started out as a movie of I see his name spelled out. I don't say it. Cagliostro, Count Cagliostro from Italy. Do you remember that guy?
Yes, I do. And I think that the pronunciation is a little different, but please continue.
Yeah, maybe Trey with his Google skills can figure out how to pronounce it, but I think Cagliostro.
Was he a mummy? Wait a minute. Mummy, and the king of Italy knighted him, and they had to change his name.
I can't remember that part. He never became a
mummy. No, they changed his name because once he was knighted, he became Sarcophagus.
Oh.
Sorry. I had to work that in there somehow. That's kind of a setup, and I saw the opportunity to work that in, and I did. I'm sorry.
I wondered why he was so adamant.
Yes. That would have been Sarcophagus. Okay. That killed that conversation, didn't it? Right there. It just blew it right out of the water.
That was great.
Don't stop laughing.
No, because, you know, mummies have a hard time. How do mummies attract a mate?
How do they eat?
So how do they attract a mate? Because, you know, they get lonely. So how do they attract a mate? If you're a mummy, how do you attract a mate? Pheromones.
Oh, that's cute.
Okay, those are my mummy jokes. Those are my mummy
good.
Jokes.
I have to admit, they were good.
Yeah,
all right, John, are you still with us, or did you hang up?
John might have hung up by now. I said, oh, I'm not going to deal with these people.
No, this is great. All right, John, please get back to your Italian mummy, okay?
Yeah, Cagliostro. Yeah, so he he's the guy who actually created the Egyptian version, the Egyptian wing of masonry. He integrated Egyptology into the Masons. That was him. And the legend goes that he was imprisoned in a cell or something. It's been too long since I read up on him, and I can't remember, but he disappeared from the cell, and people claim he's thousands of years old, just like Saint Germain we talked about last month. And I think those two even met each other once. But, so The Mummy started out as a movie about Cagliostro. It was called Cagliostro, King of the Dead. And it was supposed to star Boris Karloff. And, in fact, that version of it got so far along in development, if you just Google it, you can find a poster of Karloff and Cagliostro, just because they were doing their advanced artwork for it. But as time went on, as I said, he did create the Egyptian wing of the Masons, and they had Egyptology in the script. Well, as the script kept going, the studio executives at Universal, they liked the Egyptian part, and they're like, you know, keep making it more Egyptian and more Egyptian. And eventually it got to be so Egyptian that they just did away with Cagliostro. And they created Imhotep, which was Boris Karloff's mummy. But, I've read the script for Cagliostro, and it's, you know, pretty similar to The Mummy. It's just his name is Cagliostro, and they decided to make him a full-blown Egyptian, and they made up Imhotep, and that's that. So that's my, I guess that you could say that's the real-life inspirations behind Karloff's Mummy movie, as odd as that sounds.
It was an amazing film for sure. And I remember I saw it when I was about 5 years old, and I was terrified. And then, of course, Brendan Fraser redid the Mummy franchise. And, you know, I don't know what you guys think about Brendan Fraser, but he was a lot of fun in the Mummy. What do you guys think? And if you tell me,
I love Brendan Fraser. I absolutely think he's tremendous in anything he's in. Now, he took a step out of Hollywood, and he was on, I can't remember what show it was, and then he did an article about why he stepped away. And it was really heartbreaking. He went through an awful lot. He had been, from what I read and I heard him talking about on a talk show, he had been sexually, I don't want to say attacked because it wasn't attacked, but anyway, he was sexually mishandled, I guess, for lack of a better word, by one of the directors. And he, at the time, most people you just assumed it happened to women, but it also happened to him. And he was assaulted like that, and he never came forward, and he just simply left acting. I'm sure there were other things about it that he walked away from, but that's what I had read, and then I heard him on a talk show talking about it.
Yeah, I read a little bit of that too, Robin. And I haven't actually seen him in The Mummy, but one of my favorite movies is when he was in that movie Encino Man, where he was like a Neanderthal that got unfrozen in the 90s. That was brilliant.
He was in, and I wish I could remember the name of it. Oh, my gosh. With all the animals in it, and he bought this house with his wife, and all these wild animals would show up, and they were terrorizing them. It was it was a comedy. It was absolutely tremendously funny, and I laughed so hard. It was called Animal Something or Another. I can't remember now. But it was the funniest thing I think I've ever seen in my life.
Wow. That's really cool, Robin. Please try to figure out the name of that. That's something that we would all
I'm looking it up right now.
Watching.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
I think
it's called Furry Vengeance.
Yes. Yes. Devin knew it. I figured he would. That is absolutely one of the funniest movies I've ever seen in my life. The thing that I like about Brendan Fraser is I don't care if he's in a drama. I don't care if he's in adventure. I don't care if he's in a comedy. He brings it every single time. Just love him.
Well, he does a fair amount of research on his roles before he does it. Like, I understood he took a business ethics class before filming The Mummy Returns.
Yeah.
He wanted to learn about pyramid schemes.
And
another zinger goes out. Oh, yes.
Oh, boy. Oh, you know, another movie he was in that's really, really good, if you haven't seen it, is called Blast from the Past, where he's basically raised in a bomb shelter because his parents, Christopher Walken and Sissy Spacek, they thought that a bomb was coming. You know, this was during the whole, you know, the Cold War and everything. And so Christopher Walken, the dad, had built this elaborate bomb shelter underground where they lived for like 20 years. And then he finally comes up and gets to see the outside world, which, of course, didn't get bombed. But it's, you know, L.A. 20 years later, totally unrecognizable from, you know, the previous two decades. So it's just hilarious. And he has to try to find his way. His parents give him these directions, the things that they need to replenish the stockpile, and so he has to go find all this stuff, and it's hilarious.
Oh, that's cool. Well, apparently he was physically groped by the former president of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, Philip Burke. And now he said he's speaking out because of other male victims of harassment. You know, most people think it's just the women, but it goes both ways. Women or men get harassed just as much.
Oh, yeah.
Well, here's something interesting that ties.
Has to put up with that.
Well, here's something interesting that will tie into the Universal Monsters and what Robin's talking about. So Brendan Fraser, before he did The Mummy, he actually did a Universal Monster movie. People just don't think of it as a Universal Monster movie. So they did a biopic on the director of Frankenstein, James Whale. Or maybe James Whale only directed Bride of Frankenstein. I can't remember. So they did this biopic on James Whale called Gods and Monsters. And you've got to understand James Whale was gay. And the main crux of the movie is James Whale falling in love with his pool boy, which is a true story, and it's Brendan Fraser plays the pool boy. Now, he doesn't fall in love with James Whale back, but that's the whole movie. So it's kind of interesting, you know, because it's an earlier Universal Monster movie that he kind of did, and then there's kind of that uncomfortable element to it that he's got this old man lusting after him, and he's not, you know, interested. But has anybody seen that, Gods and Monsters?
No, I have not seen that one.
No, never heard of it. This is great. God's Monsters.
Yeah, the only reason I saw it, it was on HBO Max for free, and I was doing Classic Monsters, you know, Unmade at the time, and I knew all about James Whale, and so I gave it a watch, and it was pretty interesting because apparently it was a true story. So.
Wow.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I've heard of it. But I love how we can go from one subject kind of in a circle and still kind of tie it all back together.
Well, like I said, we always go down the rabbit hole. We go somewhere, yeah.
Yeah, this is great. And again, WLSC, AM and FM, Loris, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, we're so glad to be here with you. And we are with John LeMay, and we have Scary Cast. So we hope you're enjoying it. And John LeMay, back to you. Another story. We're demanding great stories from you, and we're getting them. And thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think I've told the best mummy stories. I've got a few more that are kind of interesting.
Well, thank you.
You know, we were talking about selling mummies earlier. Well, you know, the selling mummies didn't necessarily get to become popular until after the discovery of King Tut's tomb, which is really sensational. So back in the very early 1800s, like in 1806, I think it was, in Kentucky, they found an entire cave of mummies, but nobody in 1806 cared or saw the historical value. You know, to people of the time, you know, 1806, it was, you know, a bunch of dead Indians. So they were like, well, we're just going to burn them. So they had all these ancient mummies that they just heaped into a giant bonfire and torched. And, you know, it would have been really interesting, obviously, to study them and see, you know, where exactly they came from. Because, again, people back in 1806 kind of just assumed, well, they're just Native Americans, whereas they could have been part of the mound builder culture that's so mysterious, or could have been, you know, they have stories of ancient Egyptians being found in North America. There's the story about the Egyptian city in the Grand Canyon. I'm sure somebody on here has heard of that.
Which one is that?
No, could you please tell us a little more about that?
Well, I was hoping somebody on here would know more about it because I have a cursory knowledge of it, you know, that I just kind of remember. But sometime in the early 1900s in the Grand Canyon, there was an explorer who found a cavern, and within the cavern were ancient Egyptian mummies and artifacts. And it's one of those things that, you know, supposedly gets covered up by the Smithsonian Institute, and supposedly that cave is in a off-limits part of the canyon that nobody's allowed in. So
Anybody
that's listening, yeah, can go and Google it and get the full story, because, again, that's just kind of my memory. And whenever I do the full Mummies of North America book, I'll probably include that.
That would be interesting.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for that one. That's really cool, because we know that. And what is the name of that place? There's a there's a resort down at the bottom of the Grand Canyon. Isn't it called Deadwater?
Havasu Falls is down at the bottom of the Grand Canyon. It's just spectacularly beautiful.
Is that? I've never been there.
Mm-hmm. But that's you know, in the water.
We should absolutely
there's a little
do a...
town near there, Native American. I don't know Deadwater Canyon.
We should do a scary cast from the bottom of the Grand Canyon. I think that would be perfect. We'd have to do it during the winter so that it wouldn't be so cold, so hot and everything. But that would be cool. All right, John, do you have one more story before we do our around-the-table discussion of what we're doing these days?
Well, gosh, I should have saved one of the best ones for last. There's one other pretty interesting one. There was another famous mummy that was put on display in Las Vegas, Nevada, believe it or not. He was a Native American mummy named Cajo. And Cajo kind of ran amok throughout the early 20th century when they were kind of prior to when they built Hoover Dam. You know, so it was kind of post-Wild West, but before the Vegas region was really, you know, civilized and all that. And he's been described as possibly being the first serial killer in Nevada. And that may not really be correct. You know, he was a Native American man, kind of born with the odds against him. I think he was born with like a club foot, so he was rejected by the tribe and didn't really have a father and a mother and had a really harsh life and just a lot of bad circumstances. And I think he had to kill someone, and then after he killed the first man, he kind of just had to kill to live. And so he, you know, like I said, he was kind of known as like the first serial killer of this region called El Dorado Canyon in Nevada. And I think in 1940 or so, they finally found his body mummified in a cave. They think that he'd succumbed to a rattlesnake bite. And Las Vegas got a hold of him. And Las Vegas used to have a little celebration called El Dorado Days. You know, that's El Dorado with an H at the front. El Dorado, that's what they called it.
Oh,
and
wow.
So they would ride this mummy through the streets for their El Dorado celebration. So that's kind of, you know, interesting that Las Vegas, for a time, you know, had its own mummy too. So, I mean, they were not common, but, I mean, there was more of them than you would have thought to come from the Wild West.
So they would parade wow. this guy through the streets of Las Vegas annually or?
Yeah, probably for maybe 10 years or so, just like once a year for their El Dorado days. And then that's another one where I think it disappeared and nobody can find it.
That sounds like a movie. That sounds like, what's the movie? I can't remember it. It's I'll remember it one day. It's about just can't remember. But that sounds like a great plot for a movie. Where did the mummy go? And that's great.
Yeah.
So John, all I've got to say is you brought some of the most interesting stories we have ever had on ScaryCast to our panel and everything. And so I'd like to give everybody one last shot at John LeMay to ask you a question or tell us what you're doing or whatever. And I'm going to start with Robin McCray. Then we'll go with Dr. Trey Donaway. And we'll go with Devin Tate and Mark Johnston. And then I'll close it up. So, Robin, what do you have to ask John LeMay or anything you've got going on?
Well, and I've asked him this before, and he's answered me, what projects have you got in the works? Because you come up with some of the most interesting things I've ever heard. And I really enjoy the different directions that you come from on things. I mean, as far as, like, I've never heard of anybody that has written the kind of books, like, as far as, you know, the mummies books and that kind of thing. I mean, I'm just enthralled with this. So what have you got next on your plate that you're working on?
Oh, thanks. Well, that gives me a good opportunity to talk a little bit more about my book, which I think that was, you missed, you weren't available last time because, you know, I was talking the whole time about cowboys and monsters, vampires, mummies, and werewolves of the Wild West.
Yeah, I think I called it during that.
Yeah, oh yeah, and I had just gotten over it about then too. It was rough. But yeah, so that book is out, you know, if anybody wants it, you know, again, just Cowboys and Monsters, pretty simple. But where I'm going with this is, you know, I found so many stories that I eventually had to cut the book off. And I decided there's actually enough out there that I can do, like, just cowboys and vampires and just cowboys and werewolves and just mummies of North America. So there should be three more books, you know, in this arena, you know, just devoted to vampires because I couldn't fit all the vampire stories into the book. There was just so many. Yeah, and same again with the werewolves and the skinwalkers and the mummies. So, yeah, should be three individual books, hopefully by the end of this year, just all about that
stuff.
Oh, that's
fantastic. That is fantastic. And I love that you come on ScaryCast and share them with us.
Oh, thank you. Well, I love being here, so.
Well, that's great. We love having you.
I think I'll be back in a couple of weeks, huh? I'll be back, won't I, in just a couple of weeks for Aurora, right?
Well, yeah, that's right. That's what I'm going to talk about here at the end of the show. So I'll let everybody know about Aurora. It's going to be absolutely spectacular. All right, Dr. Trey Donaway.
I was just thinking that if we come back to this mummy, we can get Devin to talk a little bit about something because Devin's a musician, and I'm sure he knows the mummy's favorite genre of music.
I'm afraid to ask.
Oh, no.
That would be rap music. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
That's it for me.
You get an A.
You get an A plus for that one.
You really do. All right, Devin Tate, what have you got to ask John LeMay or to say about what you're doing?
Yeah, well, I just, John, because we were talking about the books that you've worked on, I had just dug out this book that I had gotten a while back and hadn't really gotten to look at. It's called Haunted Heartland, which is True Ghost Stories from the American Midwest by Beth Scott and Michael Norman. Have you heard of this book or have you heard of those authors before?
I'm at the point in my life that I have so many books in my Kindle library and even in my house that, like, I can't remember what I have, and sometimes I'll buy the same book again. It's really bad, so it's possible
I have
it, and I just don't remember.
Well, this one is interesting because there's actually a ghost story from where I grew up, and it's funny because when I was growing up, it was when I was in high school. I lived in Hayes, Kansas, and there's an old military fort there called Fort Hayes. And so the college was Fort Hayes State University. And there was a story about a woman, a pioneer woman. I think she was a nurse. I know the story goes that, you know, she's out in the hills and sometimes you would see her blue light from town and she was the blue light lady. But then this story is actually in this book and there's nothing about a blue light. It just mentions that she was buried in a big bonnet and a long flowing gown, and that there would be sightings of her later in town in that blue gown. So it's interesting how stories can change just even from, you know, in small towns just from year to year, because this was copyright 1985, so it was about, you know, 5 years later was when I lived there, and so it had already changed from the blue dress to the blue light by then.
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool, Devin. Thank you for that. And Mark Johnston, what do you have to ask or say to John LeMay?
Well, the whole time listening, it just the one thing that always came to mind is why were people so fascinated with parading around dead people or like putting them in amusement parks? For like they must have had some like weird interest back in the day with that. It's kind of odd. But also the one thing that came to mind too was I believe in the Civil War they used to also have like mummies that they would bring around to show like embalming process. So that's the only other, like, historical United States mummy that I can think of that's, like, I don't know if it was actually during, I believe it was during the Civil War, they would, like, tour around mummies as well, like, dead guys that were preserved, and to just to, like, demonstrate their, I think, the new medical technologies at the time.
Well, I thank you for that, Mark, because I'm going to make a note of that for my mummies book, because that's, I hadn't heard that, so I'm going to look that up, and that'll definitely be a chapter in it.
Well, you know, even in that,
right
even
display,
in this,
right on this, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Even in current times, you have anatomy tours, and you've got specimens that have been arranged to show the arterial system in humans, and those shows continue to this day. Have you seen any of those advertisements? Actually, I'm being serious for a change, but it is they inject arteries with some type of a latex and then peel the body away, and you end up with the it shows the arterial system of the human body. And there was a group from a Chinese exhibit which was basically just a ultra fine dissected human beings, and that was it was in places like Vegas and other places where you could go see exhibition. So people are just fascinated with the human body. So I guess that was the 19th century version of it with the mummy exhibits.
Well, that's cool. And thank you, Mark, for those comments. And thank you, Dr. Trey, for that. And I guess I'll close the show with the following. I've got a couple of interesting announcements. First of all, I am flying to Los Angeles. I've got the contract. The contract's in the mail, and I got it. I'm going to be on Unexplained, starring William Shatner, and I will be talking about The Lizard Man and The Lizard Man Companion, the new book that I've got coming out. And that book was formatted beautifully by John LeMay. And, John, thank you for everything that you did for that. And we'll be out there, and I'll be mentioning, of course, all the members of ScaryCast. It's going to be what a great time that we can promote our show and everything. And also on the 17th of April, which is Easter Sunday, we are going to do a special broadcast, a special podcast of the Aurora incident, one of the most famous UFO incidents. Is probably, I believe, now John LeMay, correct me on this if I'm wrong, but I think it's probably one of the first well-documented cases of a UFO crash into the ground. Would that be correct?
Yeah, keyword being well-documented, because I think there are some that predate it, but it's just like with Roswell, it's one of those that got a lot of attention, and there's just more details to it, more substance. So absolutely.
And we're excited about it. We've got Dr. Trey Donaway. We've got a couple of other people. I can't remember right now. I'm sorry. My old memory just won't go. But anyway, we're going to have a great time Sunday night, April the 17th, and it's going to be at 9 p.m. So we're going to have a lot of fun with that. And John LeMay is going to be our guest, because he has got that chronicled in his book, The Coming of the Airships, 1896 to 1899. It's going to be a lot of fun. So we got great things coming on with ScaryCast. And tomorrow night, Robin McCrae, tell us about tomorrow night. You've got a very special guest that you're bringing on to ScaryCast Tuesday with me and Mark Johnston. So tell us about our talk tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night, I was contacted by my friend Doreen Fisher, and I had recently done a show on World Bigfoot Radio about the abuse that goes on in this field research when it comes to the Bigfoots. You know, people get into it for all the right reasons, or most of the people, not all, but a lot of people get into it for the right reasons, and they think, you know, this is going to be great, and I'm going to go out in nature, and I want to see a Bigfoot, and, you know, I want to have that connection. What they don't realize is there is a dark side to this, and it's not safe, it's not dangerous. the least of the problems are the Bigfoot. The bigger problem comes with the researchers. I've never in my life found a field of research as competitive and as damaging as this one, not only to your, you know, emotional health, but your physical safety. And I had done that show, and Doreen contacted me, and we've been friends for a while now. And she said, you know, I experience it too. She said, too bad we can't get on a podcast and talk about everything that's happened to you and to me and, you know, kind of shed some light on it. And I said, you know what, I'm going to call John. So John was very gracious, and him and Mark normally do a show on Tuesday. And he said, well, you know, we've got John coming Monday. Why don't, you know, can you do it on Tuesday? And I said, we will definitely be there. Trey, you should show up as well. I think you would actually really, you know, it's more of a serious show. Where, I mean, not that we can't laugh like we always do, but it is more of a serious nature. You know, in this field of research, people not only get physically hurt, they get killed. And they're not dying because of any of the cryptids. They're not dying of what's going on in the woods. They're dying from our own people. Between the government and the other researchers, this is a very dangerous field to be in. You know, if you're not getting a character assassination, there's people out there that would prefer that you are not alive. And I've experienced myself, not only with people, but with the government. And it's very dangerous. You know, it really is. Like, I'm safest when I'm out in the woods with my guys. I would be out there 24/7 if I could, because I feel safer there than what goes on in this research field. And, you know, myself, I'm only one of thousands that this stuff happens to. I'm not the only one. There's nothing special about me. It, you know, it's just the field of research that I found myself in. I never set out to be in this, but I just ended up here. And Doreen's had some experience as well. And I think, you know, like when I did the show on World Bigfoot Radio, and we're going to do it again tomorrow. Doreen's going to join me tomorrow night for it. It's not about people listening to us on air. It has nothing to do with us. It has to do with the bigger picture that people are not aware of. And if they're going to be in this field of research, and it's with any of the cryptids, and it goes through the UFO plane as well, there is some serious threats out there. And, I mean, emotionally, physically. And I think if people are going to be in this field, they have a right to know. You know, watch, be careful who you're with, and be careful who watches out and hears you and hears you talking, because it's not a safe place at times. I've also met, I want to point out, and then I'll be quiet, but I also want to point out, I've met some of the best friends in my life in this research. I have been blessed by people more ways than I ever thought possible. But like everything, there's that flip of the coin. And that flip of the coin is dangerous. And so that's what we want to bring out, just so people are aware. Doesn't mean to make anybody move away from this field or be fearful. Just, you know, knowledge is power. If you don't have the information, you don't know what's even coming for you.
Wow, thanks, Robin. It's going to be a lot of fun tomorrow night, 9 p.m. Eastern time, with Mark Johnson and I, Dr. Trey. Please join us. And any of our co-hosts, please join us.
Yeah,
please
feel Devin, free. You're welcome to come, too.
We would love to have you. So thanks a lot. And I will give one last plug to the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. ScaryCast is going to have the noon panel with Dr. Trey Donaway, Robin McCray, and myself. And we'll see how we can pipe in Devin Tate and Mark Johnson. If Mark can make it with us, that's great. And if he can't, we'll see if we can get everybody in on Zoom. And we're going to have a blast on, of course, the one and only the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. That will be April the 16th. And please join us in Clayton, Georgia. And thanks a lot for everybody for being here on the one and only ScaryCast. We'll see you next week. We've got Matthew Delf and Jessica Jones, Bigfoot researchers. We're going to have a lot of fun next week, but we'll see you tomorrow night on ScaryCast for a special ScaryCast with Robin McCray talking about the dark side of Bigfoot. And next week we will have, of course, just a lot of great things. So thanks a lot. Stay tuned. Check out @ScaryCast on Facebook, and we'll see you next week. next time. Actually, but we'll see you tomorrow night with Robin McCrae on The Dark Side of Bigfoot. With Doreen Fisher. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you tomorrow night. Take care.
Everybody take care. Bye.
Great, good night. Great mummy topic. That's a wrap.
That's right.
Another Perfect. One. And he slips in another one. Yeah.